Well, good morning. You're listening to WWGH 107.1 here in Marion, Ohio. I'm Glenn Coble, and this show happens to be called On the Air, and we are on the air. And today we're kind of freewheeling it, right? We've been talking about all sorts of things, from trivia of summer to read the second inaugural address by Lincoln. Not so well, but I read it. And we also read a couple of quotes, and that's what we're going to do in this 45-minute period. We're going to read some of the quotes that famous people have said. These are actually quotes from famous people's speeches. And we're going to see if how smart you are, right? And by the way, if you have some tchotchkes to sell, you know, if you have some stuff in the garage or the basement or in the kitchen, wherever, that you're trying to get rid of, we're going to have a swap shop here in about an hour. And you can sell anything you want on the air as long as it's not something that requires state regulations or anything like that. You know, we don't allow you to sell your property or your guns or your motorcycles or your cars or stuff like that. Anything that requires a state or a federal license, we're going to pass on that. But you can sell, you know, your toaster oven that you got a new one for your birthday and now you want to get rid of the old toaster oven, we'd be glad to put that on. Sewing machines, washer dryers, you know, we'll be glad to put them on the air. Just give us a call, and that'll be next hour, not this hour, but next hour. Give us a call at 740-383-9944, and we'll put it on the air for you. We've had more and more success as we've gotten better and better weather, but specifically as the COVID has been, kind of letting up a little. I wouldn't say it's gone, but it's been letting up a little. So we'd love to have you give us a call. So get your stuff ready. And for those of you who are interested in listening, get your pen and pencils out and your piece of paper, and we'll try to have some stuff. Oh, hey, if you've got some sort of event going on at your church or something like that, we'd be glad to put that on as well. I see we have a flea market that we're announcing, so I'll put that on. If you have a garage sale, we'd be glad to put that on, location and stuff. Call in, give the location, give a phone number if you want people to call you about stuff, and maybe give us your price on if you're selling a washer dryer. Maybe you can give us your price, and we'll try and get rid of it for you. But this this three quarters of an hour, we're going to talk about, and I guess it's actually down to about 38 minutes. We're going to give you some quotes. We'll see if you can remember who made this. These were all from speeches, and we'll see if you can remember who made the speech and what the name of the speech was. Or most of them have a name, so we'll ask you if you know that. All right, here's one that can't possibly stump you too badly. One day, right there in Alabama, little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls as sisters and brothers. Now, if you didn't know that was Martin Luther King, I would be very surprised. And also, that's from his I Have a Dream speech, which has a lot of very, very memorable quotes from. I won't do all of them. I'll just do that one for right now. And I don't think I have any others from that particular speech. Maybe I do. I've got four pages of notes here, so I may have something. All right. This one we did earlier. and I think you all know it, 87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Of course, that's Abraham Lincoln, and that's the Gettysburg Address. Probably one of the best known addresses, speeches that was ever made in the United States. There are some that rival it, but probably the best. There are a lot of lines from the Gettysburg Address that are very familiar. And the Gettysburg Address, I believe, was about 3 minutes long, 5 minutes long maximum. Not very many words. I used to know how many words, but I don't remember it anymore. All right. If you hear me snuffling, I am not Mr. Snuffleupagus. I just, apparently, I was listening to our weather just before I came back on, and they said the pollen count is way up, and so obviously it is attacking me. All right, here's another one. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. Now, I should have done that in a British-sounding voice, shouldn't I? Except for I don't know how to do those. So. That was Winston Churchill. That was from his speech to Parliament in 1940 about World War II coming. And, well, actually, it was really here by then. The United States was not involved at that particular point, I don't believe. But Winston Churchill said those things. Some of these things are so well phrased that we will know most of these quotes just because they are the best phrased quotes in any of these speeches. And they really mean something. If you listen to the words of we shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight in the landing grounds, we shall fight in the fields and in the streets, we shall fight in the hills, and we will never, or we shall never, surrender. That tells exactly where the people of England were at that particular time in 1940. Or at least it tells where Winston Churchill was. And with Winston Churchill and his total focus on staying in that battle, England had a really rough 5 years. But they did persevere, and they did hang in there, and were part of the winning side in that. Here's one that you may not have heard very often, but you'll know because of what country it's from. You'll probably know who said it. Ours is not a drive for power, but purely a nonviolent fight for India's independence. That was Mahatma Gandhi. Now, you know, I used to think that Mahatma Gandhi's name was Mahatma Gandhi, but it's not. It's Mahatma Gandhi. And that's from his speech, Quiet India. Quit India. He was trying to challenge the British to get out of India and allow India to be its own sovereignty. India has quite a remarkable history, especially with its relationship with England. And there have been a lot of terrific movies made out of that struggle. But fortunately, they had great people like Mahatma Gandhi and many other great leaders in India that helped them get through that they had quite a battle, but it helped them get through with some dignity and to start their own sovereign nation. This one, I would be very surprised if you don't know this, just because there was a book that was used this line as its title. The audacity of hope, that is God's greatest gift to us, the bedrock of this nation, the belief in things not seen, the belief that there are better days ahead. That's from Barack Obama, his 2004 Democratic National Convention keynote address. I think that's about the time that my wife and I said, we're going to have to go get and support that man. Loved his speech. And like we talked about earlier today, and also like we talked about yesterday with Scott and Dr. Feynman, Barack is one of the finest orators that we've had as a president. You know, depending on your choice, he may be first, second, third, fourth, or fifth. But most likely he is not beyond fifth, unless you just didn't like him as a person and you refused to give him his props, as the kids say. We will never forget them, nor the last time we saw them this morning as they prepared their journey and waved goodbye and slipped the surly bounds of earth to touch the face of God. Well, that was one of those other people who we listed yesterday as one of the top orators as a president, Ronald Reagan. And that was a terribly sad day as he talked about the Challenger and how, if you recall correctly, if you're as old as I am, you remember seeing it blow up after it took off. The stunned silence of people watching as parts started flying off of it and going all different directions. Yeah, it still is kind of sad. It still brings up sadness in my heart to think about that. It was a beautiful day down in Florida, and as it took off, it just looked like it was perfect. And then, wham, it blew apart. The foundation stone of nation, wait a minute, let me start this over again. The foundation stone of national life is, and ever must be, the high individual character of the average citizen. Now, some people would say that's a little bit Pollyannish. I'm one of those people, but it was from a president who was not Pollyannish at all. That was from President Teddy Roosevelt in his Muckrake speech. The foundation stone of national life is and ever must be the high individual character of the average citizen. Now, right now we are in that challenge where one side of the citizenry believes the other side of the citizenry, and I don't care which side you're on, one side thinks the other side is has no individual character at all. somehow or other, we're going to have to find a way to get through this time period where we don't give each other credit for being thoughtful. And that's one of the things that I talk about all the time in my Progressive Life show, is that you have to educate yourself and you have to know what people are talking about. You have to try to understand where your, I will say opponent, but it's really not your opponent, but the people that disagree with your position in life, you have to understand where they're coming from, or at least you have to try. I'm being a liberal. I try to listen to Fox News on a regular basis, at least once a week, for a period of time. And that gives me an idea of where they're coming from. It also disrupts my belief in mankind, because sometimes I hear some of the things that I think are lies being spouted as truths, it makes me not understand how the people on the other side of the aisle from me can think that way. But I have to force myself to say, well, that's the way they think, so let's meet them somehow or other and try to help each other out. That's kind of what the current president is trying to do, I believe. In looking forward to the moment which is intended to terminate the career of my public life, my feelings do not permit me to suspend the deep acknowledgement of that debt of gratitude which I owe to my beloved country. Now, it's obviously a president that is either resigning or has been defeated. but I'll tell you what, it was the very first president of the United States. That was from George Washington when he decided to resign after his second term. And he did. He decided on his own to resign. He was not told he had to resign. He was getting older. He was not in the best of health. He was in pretty decent health. He was uncomfortable. His body was rebelling against him. And he wanted to spend some time with his family and his on his beloved farm. And that's what he did. And that kind of set the pace for presidents to follow until we got to Roosevelt, who did stay for four terms, three terms in a few months, but he was elected four times. And after that, we decided that that was too long, and we decided to go back to the two terms that Washington had decided were enough for him. So that's where that speech comes from. It comes from his that phrase, that two sentences. Yeah. One sentence that comes from George Washington's resignation. Come here to the gate, Mr. Gorbachev. Open this gate, Mr. Gorbachev. Tear down this wall. If you don't know that, you haven't been alive in America for the last few years. That was Ronald Reagan as he gave some remarks at the Brandenburg Gate. And that was one of those speeches by Reagan that just overwhelmed the listeners. They just loved hearing him give that challenge to Gorbachev, who was the head of the Russian, the Soviet Union at the time. I remember thinking of that as I wasn't as enamored with that speech as some people, and I'm not sure whether it had anything to do with that I was a Democrat instead of a Republican, but it was kind of, when I listened to it, it was kind of not real flexible of a speech. It was kind of read rotely, but when he got to that phrase, that warmed my heart. I loved hearing him say that, and I will always give him the dignity and the honor of being a good speechwriter because of that that particular phrase. And he had other speeches that were good. There's no doubt about it. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. If you went to grade school in the United States of America in the 60s or the 50s, that was pounded into your head. That was Patrick Henry. Now, many of us didn't know when it was given, but that was in his second Virginia Convention speech, which probably most of us at that age didn't know they had a Virginia Convention. That phrase, give me liberty or give me death, was pounded into your head in the 50s and 60s if you were in grade school. I remember it well. Mrs. Frace was my teacher at the time. I had Mrs. Frace, Mrs. Heck, Mrs. Joyce. That was third, fourth, and fifth grade teacher. And my sixth grade teacher was Mr. Cooper. I don't know why I remember their names, but I do. All right. For the past 2 weeks, you have been reading about a bad break. Yet today, I consider myself the luckiest man in the face of the earth. Now, he said it with a great deal more intensity than I just said it. That was Lou Gehrig's farewell address to baseball. If you've ever listened to that speech and looked at his face as he's saying that, it'll break your heart. He was dying of what we can now call Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, I can't remember what it, atropic something or other. But anyway, he passed away not too long after that. But he had to commend yourself as the luckiest man on the earth as you know you're dying of a disease is quite intense. And he did have a great baseball career. And I've thought about that, you know. I've had a great life, and when I pass, I hope that I'm able to, I don't know how it'll happen, but if I'm able to think about my life as I'm leaving, I hope I have enough courage and enough honor to let the people around me know that I had a great life, and that I am very happy with where I've been. I was thinking about that this morning while I was getting ready to come to the show, what I will tell my children. And I've told my wife that my job from now on is to teach my children how to live and die with honor. And hopefully I can do that. Hear me, my chiefs. I am tired. My heart is sick and sad. From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever. Well, this is one of the most famous Indian chiefs or Native American chiefs in the history, in the Anglo history of the United States. I'm sure that they had as great a chiefs prior to us coming here, but that was Chief Joseph, and that was his surrender speech. A terrible time for the Native Americans, and an embarrassing and not so honorable time for the United States government, the one that we have now. Hear me, my chiefs, I am tired. My heart is sick and sad. From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever. So that was his surrender speech. Beautiful words. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Again, if you don't know who said that, you haven't been in America for a long time. That was John F. Kennedy in his inaugural speech. And that may have been one of the most remembered lines of any inaugural speech. Which will probably be, that line probably is the most memorable inaugural speech line of anyone. You profess to believe that of one blood, God made all nations of men to dwell on the face of all earth, and hath commanded all men wherever to love one another. Yet you notoriously hate all men whose skins are not colored like your own. And this was said not recently. This was said a long time ago by Frederick Douglass. And I think I read this speech probably last year sometime. I read this speech that comes from. It comes from his 4th of July speech. Isn't that interesting how current it seems to be, which means that we haven't moved forward very fast. You profess to believe that of one blood God made all nations of men to dwell on the face of all earth, and have commanded all men everywhere to love one another. Yet you notoriously hate all men whose skins are not colored like your own. If I ever had a battle cry, that would be it. And I happen to be an old white man. I just can't understand why we think there's any difference between a little black boy and a little white girl. Or, I mean, of course there's a sexual difference, but I mean, there is no, under the flesh, there, we're all the same. We're all pink, as I've been told before, under the flesh. But, yeah, if there was ever a battle cry that I could stand up with, that might be one of them. All right. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. Also, this gentleman was a good orator. I wouldn't say he was a great orator, but he had good speech writing. I listened to, I believe, Nicole Wallace was one of his writers. I'm not sure about that, but that was George Bush's 9/11 address to the nation. However, these acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve, is being challenged right now. It seems to me that there are an awful lot of people that would like to shatter the steel that we're made of, or at least like to dent the steel that of our resolve. But George Bush said that in his 9/11 address to the nation, which was an excellent address and needed at that time. This one, I have read this lady's speeches before. I'm not sure if I read this particular one. I have as much muscle as any man and can do as much work as any man. I have plowed and reaped and husked and chopped and mowed. And can any man do more than that? That's from Sojourner Truth. In her speech, Ain't I a Woman? I did read that speech, Ain't I a Woman? It's interesting to read her speeches because, well, she didn't have a whole lot of speeches, but the couple that I've read, they write them down in her dialect. So it gives more of a feeling of being there. And, not of being there, but it gives you a feeling of what the true meaning of it. She was not a highly educated woman. She was a former slave. And she was a runaway slave. But the Ain't I a Woman speech, I think, is probably no more than a minute long, maybe 2 minutes long. I didn't know anything about Sojourner Truth. That shows the weakness of our American education, I'm afraid. But I had never heard her name. And that's a name you're not going to forget, right? Sojourner Truth. That was not her original name, but that was the name she took after slavery. After listening to that speech that only lasted a minute or two, I came to really respect that lady for everything she had done. Here's another one. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes, needs effort to convert retreat into advance. Of course, that's Franklin Roosevelt. But fear itself. We need fear is What we need to fear is fear itself, right? And that was his inaugural address at a time that the nation was struggling with bank closings and dust bowls and all sorts of stuff that was really tearing us apart. But he was strong enough to announce that the real thing that we needed to fear was fear itself. Again, we're in a situation right now in America where the thing that we need to fear is fear itself. And I think a lot of us, especially on the right, left side of the aisle, are afraid that we have certain of us have decided that democracy is dead, or a democracy is trying to be killed by, in lack of a better term, Nazism. It just seems to be that way to some of us. Anyway, I will continue to work on my confidence, but I struggle from day to day after listening to some of these people talk. People that seem to be talking without much education about the situation. All right. I believe that man will not merely endure. He will prevail. He is immortal, not because he's alone amongst creatures as an inexhaustible voice, but because he has a soul, a spirit capable of compassion, sacrifice, and endurance. One of our great writers, William Faulkner, wrote that. And that was from his Nobel Prize speech. Let me read that again to you. I love that. I believe that man will not merely endure, he will prevail. He is immortal, not because he's alone amongst creatures and has an inexhaustible voice, but because he has a soul, a spirit capable of compassion, sacrifice, and endurance. And those three emotions, compassion, sacrifice, and endurance, those seem to be in short service right now. We don't seem to be able to draw them up. There seems to be a feeling that if you get it, I want it. You know, that kind of, as they say in the Bible, covetousness. And by the way, that happens to be one of the Ten Commandments, that thou shalt not covet. Right? The people that really think about other people getting something that they don't get, just drives me crazy. I guess it's because I was brought up by a mother who is a devout preacher's wife and truly believed that we should not covet other people's good fortune. We shouldn't covet other people's wealth or things that they have. We should do as we can for each other. That's really where my mother came from. And I hope I'm honoring her presence in my life and honoring her past. I have several cousins who have passed away, but knew my mother and spoke so highly of my mother, which is not something that cousins tend to do, but they would often speak to me how Aunt Betty, my mother's name was Beatrice, and they called her Aunt Betty. Aunt Betty was an angel, and I believe that she was an angel. She had a wonderful heart, and I hope I honor her with my life. Always for them, duty, honor, country, always their blood and sweat and tears as we sought the way and the light of the truth. And I'll tell you what, this comes from a West Point address. And can you imagine a better thing to talk about to West Point graduates? That was given by General MacArthur. Always their blood and sweat and tears as we sought the way and the light and the truth. See, even these one sentences out of these relatively famous speeches can inspire you, or at least they do me. Maybe I'm just an old softy, but they do inspire me. People seem to be able to pull those words together in a speech. I used to write speeches, and I couldn't find those words. I looked. Believe me, I looked. I've written some decent speeches, but some of these single lines from a speech are better than my entire speeches that I wrote. Oh, well. We try. We do the best that we are given. All right, here's another one. And I think you'll probably recognize who said this. Let us therefore brace ourselves, as a police car goes by. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, man will say this was their finest hour. You remember that? That line right there, this was their finest hour. I think I could have said that and you would have known who said it. Winston Churchill. That was in his June 18th, 1940 address. He was one of the better orators from the United Kingdom. There's no doubt about that. I often wonder if he was drunk when he wrote a lot of these things. And he was quite active when it came to imbibing in spirits. And sometimes, I'm not so certain that it doesn't, some of these spirits allow you to be free to write what you believe. And when I've written a couple of things when I had imbibed in alcohol, and I some of the things I go back and I read after I've written them, and I go, holy cow, I wrote that crap. But others I go back and I didn't know I was that thoughtful. Or I didn't know I was that brave. Or I didn't know that I was that melancholy. Quite often when I used to drink, and I don't drink very much anymore, but back then I did become rather melancholy when I would drink, I don't know whether it's good or it's bad. Sometimes it was good, sometimes it was not so good. I guess probably depended on the number of ounces that were taken before I wrote. Oh well. Well, we're gonna be taking our break pretty soon here, but let me give you this one. Yeah, I got time for a couple more, maybe. Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a day that will live in infamy, the United States was suddenly and deliberately attacked. Of course, that's Franklin Roosevelt in his speech about Pearl Harbor. And I always mispronounce infamy. There's an M in there, and I try to make it an N. Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. And that speech sparked the United States going to war against Japan and fighting back in the Pacific. To appreciate the importance of fitting every human soul for independent action, think for a moment of the immeasurable solitude of self. Now this one, I'm going to let you listen to that one more time so maybe you can understand. I didn't understand it, and I'm hoping that you will. To appreciate the importance of fitting every human soul for independent action, Think for a moment of the immeasurable solitude of self. That was said by Elizabeth Cady Stanton in a resignation statement that she made. I still struggle with that. And I even looked up what she was resolving, and I wish I had written it down. I didn't. But good words. I like the words. I am a word lover. I am not a wordsmith. I am just a word lover. I love to hear words like that. My wife and I spend many times during the day looking up words that some of these really bright young people are using in their speeches on television. Only this power, only the Soviets of soldiers and the peasants' deputies can solve the great question of the land in a non-bureaucratic way and not in the interest of landholders. And that was Vladimir Lenin, 1917 speech to the soldiers. Interesting. What a life that man had, right? And the last one for this period, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. Another Winston Churchill speech. That was his first speech to Parliament. Well, we'll be back after 15 minutes. Hang with us.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion.